Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Now, we turn to the stories making the business and front pages of today's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Breida Brown of Unique Media. Welcome, Breida.
Good morning.
And Kieran Hancock, the business editor with the Irish Times. Good morning to you, Kieran.
Morning, Bobby.
Now, we'll start, as we do often on this station, with the paper of note and the front page of that paper of note, the Irish Times. Oil and gas prices tumble as Iran reopens the Strait of Hormuz. Tell us more.
Well, maybe a positive day yesterday in terms of the Middle East conflict. We know that oil and gas prices have been bobbing up and down over the last 7 weeks since this all kicked off. Because the Strait of Hormuz, through which about a fifth of the world's oil and gas reserves go through, it has been closed off by the Iranians as part of its war with Iran. With Israel and the United States. So Iran has said it will reopen the Strait of Hormuz. There's a ceasefire has been put in place between Israel and Lebanon. So that seems to have paved the way for further negotiations to take place between the US and Iran. So that's a positive. The market certainly responded well to it. Brent crude yesterday was down 9% to $90. That's kind of a key measure of the price for a barrel of oil. And European gas prices were down 7%. So, and that came probably 24 hours or 30 hours or thereabouts after we were hearing warnings that Europe only had about 6 weeks left of jet fuel.
Yeah.
Which set the alarm bells ringing for a lot of people, obviously, because of anybody with holiday plans for this summer.
Well, we'll look at that in a minute.
Yeah.
Breida, there's some talk about tolls that hasn't really hit the headlines yet.
Not yet.
It could be something that might come back to scuttle these peace talks a bit later on.
Absolutely, yeah. The key at the moment is basically how quickly will the shipping resume to pre-war conditions and obviously take the pressure off everything else that's going on in the world. But then, yeah, they're talking about tolls that could be imposed by Iran. Now, the French President Emmanuel Macron came out yesterday and said that they would oppose all restriction, including any attempt to privatise the Strait or to introduce a toll-paying system. So it looks like Europe will obviously do whatever they can to make sure that that doesn't happen. But the other interesting piece as well that we were going to talk about was the editorial in the Irish Independent in relation to this, which actually talks about the human impact that's involved here, which, don't get me wrong, I know oil and gas prices have a huge impact on business and domestic consumption. But we do forget that people are dying as a result of this war. And there are some stark figures in this piece in the Irish Independent saying that more than 2,000 people in Lebanon have been killed in this conflict. Israel says two of its civilians and 13 soldiers have died. And in Tehran, 3,636 people have been killed, including 1,700 civilians and 250.
So over 6,000 people in 6 weeks.
And that's quite stark looking at those figures, because again the focus is very much, I think, on business trade and how it's impacting on the world, and we have tended to forget about the human side of it. And obviously then we've got Donald Trump, you know, who's now claiming that the ceasefire is underway at the moment and he's ending his 10th war. But, you know, this piece says as well the Middle East remains far from stable, and we have heard much from the US president about his peace credentials, but he now needs to seize this opportunity to use them to their best effect. And obviously this is for a man as well who wants to get the Nobel Peace Prize at some point, so he needs to up his game there.
And he's found a challenge in the Pope, probably unexpectedly from his point of view.
And the Pope isn't
backing
down
either. The Pope has absolutely stood up to him.
Absolutely. And probably one of the first people in quite a long time to do that. So, but he doesn't react well to that, Trump. So let's see how that might play out at another point.
Kieran, let's move to matters more local. Martin, given 12 months in job as exit deadline moved forward. Fionnán Sheehan here telling us that he's talking to an unnamed Fianna Fáil minister, which doesn't sound very loyal to be talking to Fionnán Sheehan about Micheál Martin's future.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the last general election, Micheál Martin was the winner, much to everyone's surprise, but he was. Fianna Fáil won that election, as it were, and that's why he's going to be Taoiseach under this rotating thing with Fine Gael until I think it's November of next year. And now, you know, you roll on, what is it, 15, 16 months since the general election or since the government came into power. And he's definitely on the ropes. Part of it is to do with how the presidential campaign went for Fianna Fáil last year and that disastrous Jim Gavin candidacy. But more recently, obviously, we had the fuel protests last week. And the claim is that the leadership is too centralised and that Micheál Martin really wasn't listening to the grassroots concerns about the cost of living issues that have been bubbling away for quite a long time. So three of the youngest TDs came out and sort of made this point, and they said that the social contract is shaky, effectively, and a lot of people feel that there's no hope of getting on the property ladder, and that they're just feeling under massive financial strain. Now, Micheál Martin's a wily operator; he's very experienced. We should remember, he said,
the only man who survived the crash politically.
He saved Fianna Fáil. He took over as leader in 2010 in the run up to the 2011 election. Anyway, when Fianna Fáil was almost wiped out, it only ended up with 19 seats. He held on to his. And you might recall that a lot of senior Fianna Fáil politicians at that time jumped ship. They decided not to stand in the election because they knew they'd lose their seat. So they walked away. He didn't. And it's 16 years since he became leader. And in that time, Fine Gael, which is, you know, has been returned to government every time since, has had three leaders.
Yeah.
So he's a survivor. He's very experienced. And it's only a short time ago that we were worrying about his meeting with Donald Trump in the run-up to St. Patrick's Day in the White House. And he came through that very well. So
I underestimated him at your peril, Breda.
I just sort of felt in this situation, I felt he was a little bit tone deaf, very much at the start of this issue in relation to the fuel crisis. I saw the press conference that he did, the very initial one. And even as I was watching it, I felt, OK, it feels like he's not understanding maybe what's going on at a grassroots level in the rural areas. So that was my concern there. I think when it comes to anything, there's a very fine line between being confident and being cocky. And we just need to be very careful there. And he's going into a very busy time period now as well, which I think is his eye is on that ball, which is the EU presidency for the second half of this year. And maybe the eye wasn't on the ball of what was going on at home. And unfortunately, this could be problematic for him now.
And just before we leave it, the four, I suppose, heir apparents have all been damaged in their own way.
They have. And Jim O'Callaghan,
that may prolong his longevity.
Definitely,
very much so. And up until he came out with this, you know, bring in the army scenario last week, he was very much the heir apparent. He was biding his time. He was staying in the background until the time was right. At the moment, though, they are saying there's no heave imminent. It's probably more than likely going to happen early next year. But according to Fionnán Sheehan here in the Irish Independent today, it's a when, not if.
Yeah. Kieran, Joe Brennan has a great piece in your own paper today, the Irish Times, about where next for PTSB now that it's been bought by this Austrian fourth largest banking group, BAWAG.
Yeah, Joe's written a number of really good pieces this week about PTSB. He's been following the bank for a long time and the sales process as well. So PTSB unveiled this Austrian bank, BAWAG, which is, say, is the fourth largest banking group, has agreed a deal to purchase it for 1.6 billion. The state is the majority shareholder with 57%. The state's backed it. So it looks like it'll go through. It's not an absolute given. I think they need 75% of shareholder approval at the EGM that'll be called to sign this over. But anyway, what does this mean for PTSB and what will it mean for Irish banking? Joe's written a column here today in the Irish Times today to say that a lot of focus has over the last few days has been on the likelihood that BAWAG will look to reduce the headcount at PTSB. It has a very high ratio costs of staff to income, 75%, which is way above the norm.
Compared to 36%
at
BAWAG. And even, you know, the Bank of Ireland and AIB are sort of in or around 50%. So it's out of kilter.
Yeah.
And that's partly to do with it's a legacy of the sort of pre-crash era. And so forth, and the fact that it really hasn't been able to turbocharge its revenue in the way that AIB or Bank of Ireland have in the recovery phase. But BAWAG has agreed, it's given a 2-year commitment not to cut branch numbers here in Ireland and also to retain the PTSB headquarters. So it looks as if there won't be any major headcount reduction in the near term. But It's also, Joe is also writing about how, in fact, ironically, the headcount could go up because
they're going to take in services in-house that have been contracted out.
They're outsourcing a number of services at the moment in relation to IT and also the management of a loan book that came from Ulster Bank, and they have some consultants and so forth. So he's making the point that BAWAG in Austria did away with all of that sort of outsourcing, brought it in-house. Bank of Ireland has done something similar as well. Bank of Ireland's headcount went up as a result of that. It'll probably do the same at PTSB. So the numbers might actually go up
before they come down.
Mm-hmm. And they're also looking at ways in which they can bring some of their expertise, let's say, in various lending practices that they're using in Austria, Germany and the Netherlands. They might bring them to the Irish business. So, for example, household energy efficiency loans, small business loans, self-employed products, investment brokerships, you know, that type of thing. The type of thing that PTSB hasn't done. PTSB is very heavily focused on mortgage lending.
And anything that brings more competition, obviously, into the marketplace as well will be welcomed. And it does, as Kieran said, seems to be, those new products seem to be focusing more, maybe the small business and self-employed banking products, again, for those sort of much smaller
I think, make no mistake about it, though, Breida, you know, while there may be numbers going up in the short term, as Kieran has outlined, this bank did have 400 branches in Austria. It now has 70.
Absolutely. This is absolutely coming down the track. And again, PTSB have, they cut 10% of the workforce last year. They now have just under 3,000 full-time equivalents.
Yeah.
So that number will absolutely reduce.
Just to say, in the area of competition, Bobby, on the same day that this deal was being unveiled, Monzo, which is one of these digital fintechs, is a kind of a Revolut-style operator. It also launched in the Irish market, and that could be equally significant in many ways.
And just to close it out, because what he says is the overwhelming view among analysts is that the Austrians have landed one hell of a deal.
They have, by the sounds of it, absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
let's see how it all pans out.
We will. Kieran, you mentioned earlier there about some travel chaos that might be looming on the horizon. Paul Colgan is telling us that consumer confidence has taken a battering since the start of the year. And when that happens, holiday bookings can, he doesn't say will, but can take a pause.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of nervousness now among holiday makers. Anybody who's booked a trip, they're wondering, will it still go ahead? And for those who haven't yet, they're wondering about prices. You know, are they going to go up or down, or will there still be flights going to their favourite destination? So Paul Colgan goes through that today. Michael O'Leary has been out warning that there's only a certain amount of fuel in the market at the moment, and that some flights could be in jeopardy if there isn't a solution. Now, you know, the strait is supposed to open up, so maybe all of these problems will fade away. But if there is a resumption of the war in the Middle East, they'll come back very, very much so. So what happens if there's a reduction in jet fuel coming into Europe? I suppose a couple of things will happen. One, the airlines, it's expected that the airlines will start cutting routes or cancelling flights.
Fat routes.
Yeah, so this is routes like, let's say, Malaga or flights into...
Well, there's a load of flights every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they'll consolidate those, for example. And if they do it, I think it's a little more than 2 weeks out. If they cancel your flight, they don't have to pay you any compensation. So everybody should keep an eye on their emails just to make sure that their flights are that are due to go out in the next few weeks are actually taking off. Or you might be redirected to another flight at a different time, which may or may not suit you. Now, Owen Curry, who's a travel expert, he's got his own travel website. He's been on the airwaves talking about this a lot over recent days. And he makes the point that in terms of Ireland, Ryanair and Aer Lingus are two of the biggest operators in Europe.
Purchasing clout.
And they have a lot of purchasing clout. Aer Lingus is owned by International Airlines Group, which also owns BA and Vueling in Spain and so forth. So there might be a silver lining there. The other thing is that Aer Lingus flies transatlantic flights into America. So you'd imagine it will be able to source some jet fuel in North America. And I don't think jet fuel in North America is in short supply at the moment. So from an Irish perspective, perhaps even if the war does resume, perhaps it mightn't be as bad as others might. But he's also making the point as well that a lot of people who are thinking of going to, let's say, Turkey, Cyprus or Greece, because they've kind of been on the fringe of this conflict.
And they've lost out.
Yeah, they're being rockets lobbed at these areas.
And Spain, Portugal have gained.
They've all gained because they're not in,
in that
the
zone.
Direct firing line exactly in relation to that zone. But interestingly as well, just one other thing Owen mentions, check your travel insurance policy. He said that many of them do not cover flight disruptions, but they can be upgraded for a small fee. So it might be worth just looking at that at the moment. One other thing somebody said to me yesterday was, but what's going to happen? I have my flight booked. Am I going to get an email now saying, actually, we're going to put a surcharge on because of the cost of fuel? And Owen Carey doesn't think that will actually happen. He thinks the price you've already paid will probably stay. But the problem will be if you book late, you're going to end up having to pay a premium.
It'll be built into the fares. Just actually on the fuel surcharge, but GoCar, which is the car share in Ireland, they've introduced a €2 fuel surcharge on every booking, so it's a real sign of the times.
Yeah.
And with the Strait reopening and, you know, hopefully prices coming down, I wonder how quickly they'll unwind that.
Well, hopefully, very quickly. Cork's getting their own Lewis, and that's good news.
They are.
And Cork always wanted everything. Looking at the route, and I know Cork reasonably well, all the way from Mahon Point right out to Ballincollig, taking in MTU and UCC, Kent Station, Bishopstown. It's really, like, it really does cover the major population centres of the city.
It's a really comprehensive route. It's 20 kilometres right across the city, 27 stops, and it's going to cost $2.5 billion.
So what?
Exactly. So they're totally agree. Yeah, they're saying in the Irish Examiner this morning, it will cost $2.5 billion, probably more than double what they had initially estimated. But obviously the world has changed since those original estimates come out. More importantly, people are interested in when is it going to be ready? So obviously we have to go through the whole, there's a public consultation at the moment. There'll be feedback. They'll refine the revised route. Construction should start by 2031. And hopefully, Bobby, we'll be ringing the bell in 2036.
It's so still way too long.
It is way too long.
Way too long.
But these are huge infrastructure projects that do take time. And as you said, going across 27 stops across 20 kilometres, it will take that length of time. What other people are wondering is, what are we going to call it? It's the Lewis. So some people are saying, will it be the Cluis, the Cork Lewis? And another one I read there recently was the Suez, because there's so many hills in Cork. And Suez
is the Irish
for up
all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. It could be the Suez.
There you go. Moving on from the Cluis, Kieran. Are you somebody who likes to complain? You don't strike me as the complainer.
Not at all. I'm very easy to satisfy, Bobby. But Sinead Ryan she's written an article today in the Indo. Thanks for giving me all these Indo stories to review, Bobby. I really do appreciate it. Anyway, how to complain about poor service the right way and who to call for help. So she goes through the various ways. This is on foot of a report from the CCPC, which is a consumer watchdog, which kind of outlines all of the complaints that it received in 2025. And it was huge. It was nearly 43,000. The CCPC doesn't actually act on any of these complaints, but it advises people how they can sort of go about getting some redress. And then she goes through the various areas. If you have a problem in financial services, you can go, or your pension, you can go to the ombudsman there. There's the Commission for Regulation of Utilities if you have an issue with your gas and electricity bills. There's ComReg for telecoms, and telecoms have been among some of the worst offenders in terms of customer service. And then in terms of travel, we've been talking about travel. Where do you go in that situation? And she also gives some tips as well on how to deal with these complaints and how to go forward with them. And persistence apparently is key. Don't back off.
You have to stay with it.
You have to stick with it. And it's not easy, because they'll often make you wait hours.
Sometimes the process wears you down and you just say, I just can't do this anymore.
They'll keep you hanging for ages on the phone.
And you'll go away and... maybe that's what they want all along.
Well, Ryanair are masters of that, aren't they?
Breda, Rory McIlroy, an amazing golfer, an amazing career. He's still a young man. There's a lot of talk about his finances in a number of the papers today. Inside Rory McIlroy's financial empire, it's a certainty that he will become a billionaire.
A billionaire. Well, he added $4.5 million to his career earnings with the victory at the Masters there recently. This piece by Kim Bielenberg in the Irish Independent goes through some of the brands and sponsorship deals and endorsements that he's involved with. But also he's a shareholder in a huge amount of companies, including Whoop. He is also involved with a company called Kaya Health and a couple of others. Let's Get Checked, actually, the Irish company that started here, which sends medical tests to a consumer's front door. So the he basically has a company set up that he runs all of this content through, and that company focuses mainly on two sectors. One is sports performance and the other is health, which obviously are his two areas of interest. There's an interesting insight, though, from there's a new biography coming out written by a US sports writer called Alan Shipnook. And he gives an interesting insight. He says, Rory dropped out of school at 15 and he's self-conscious about that. Success in business is important to him. He doesn't want to be seen as the dumb golfer, but as a sophisticated business investor with a sophisticated mind. So I thought that was sort of quite an interesting insight in terms of where he's going from that perspective. But look, his sporting prowess alone, that's where the majority of his money has come from.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. It also references how he doesn't make a business decision without consulting with a few key people. And they include JP McManus, who won the Grand National just last weekend, and Dermot Desmond as well, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, seems
and
to should be also point out,
yeah, that Whoop is the wearables company. So they have devices that basically monitor your sleep and your health and so forth. He was wearing a green band around his wrist during the Masters, and they released the information around it. So it told us that he got 9 hours sleep the night before his final round. Told him what his heart rate was going at when he was playing the last hole and all of that kind of stuff. It's interesting. Punters like it, but he's an investor in Whoop, and that's why the information was made public. Mm. But also worth noting that Shane Lowry is also an investor in Whoop.
Absolutely, yeah. And what about Liv, Kieran? Do you think that'll? Do you think that's going to survive?
I don't think it's going to live long.
Yeah.
No.
By the sounds of it, they've invested over $5 billion to try and disrupt golf. This is Saudi Arabia and it's a public investment fund. But it seems they've got the collie wobbles now about golf.
There's a lot going on and a lot of stuff being cancelled out there, which I think is the main thing.
Yeah. So it looks like this season they'll probably finish out, but that might be the end of it. And certainly the players who are on the LIV Tour are saying they've no certainty beyond that.
Can't wait for a pit stop. Chinese electric SUV has a voice activated in-seat toilet. This is just the car I want.
Now, you've more of a reason now to go and buy an EV, not to mind gas and fuel prices. Yeah, it's a Chinese brand called Seres, I think it's called, S-E-R-E-S. And they've just been granted a patent to install voice-activated in-vehicle toilets in the car. So it involves a waste disposal unit that slides under the passenger seat, of all places, and it can be accessed with a push or a voice command. And then the waste is collected, but it has to be emptied manually. Now, I was sort of wondering, well, how does this work? Do you have to pull in at the side of the road? And what if there's other people in the car?
It doesn't sound
and
great.
How do you, you know, disentangle yourself from your clothes to basically use the loo? I wasn't sure. There wasn't enough detail on this, so I'm absolutely not convinced.
Interestingly, Kieran, this isn't the first time we've had this. In 1954, there was a Rolls-Royce Silver Wraith recently sold at auction, commissioned by American inventor Joseph J. Mashkush, who wanted to be able to broker deals on the move uninterrupted. So there was one in a Rolls-Royce
in
1954.
There are no details on the performance of that vehicle for said service. But, however, Sotheby's did manage to sell it in Milan last year for €126,500. So there you go.
We thought having a phone in a car was important back in
the day. There you go. Well, look, Breida Brown from Unique Media, Kieran Hanker from the Irish Times, thank you for a great review of the business stories. Enjoy your weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.